Hi, welcome to the Religious Feminism Podcast. I'm your host, April Young Bennett, and I'm a Mormon feminist. And today we're going to be talking about Islamic feminism, and I'll let my guest introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Amanda Qureshi. I'm a digital media professional and interfaith activist living in Austin, Texas. I am also a Muslim feminist, and I think a lot of people think that that's an oxymoron.
People say the same thing about Mormon feminists. They're like, that's not a real thing, is it? Yes, it is. All right, first let's talk about some of the positive things about the Islamic faith that you appreciate about it.
You know, a lot of times when people ask me about Islam or about why I converted to Islam, which I did when I was 25, they are really interested in, you know, geopolitical issues or social issues. And in fact, I converted to Islam and I was drawn to it really for the spiritual aspects of it. It was what I needed and what I was looking for at that time. I had been raised Christian. I had left my faith. I was actively seeking for something. And I happened upon Islam and it really resonated with me on multiple levels. And so I love my tradition. I love my faith. I understand that the pure revelation and the teachings, and I think this is true in every religion, are often very different from the way that it plays out, right, in society or in community. But you know, as far as the positive aspects, I mean, I feel very strongly about the idea of each Muslim having their own connection, direct connection to the divine. I feel very strongly about the kind of the very strict monotheism of Islam, and you know, the lack of you know, any kind of intermediaries or any kind of thing that stands between us and God. So, you know, there's no Trinity in Islam, and we are very careful about not anthropomorphizing God, right? We want to make sure that our worship is not diluted by any kind of idolatry. So those are things that resonate very, very strongly with me. And it's, you know, after having left my religion and kind of seeking through some hard questions, these are things that I felt were essential in whatever tradition I was going to carry on with. And then the other thing that is really compelling about Islam, and this kind of is a great segue into the conversation around feminism, is how social justice oriented it is. And you know, I mean, I know, again, people are very skeptical because of what they see happening in the world and because of a lot of things that are, I believe, misrepresented in the media. But, you know, if you go back and you study the origin of the tradition, it was really a revolutionary tradition, right? Like, there were, the pre-Islamic Arabian culture was, you know, tribal, extremely patriarchal, and very much about power belonging to very specific men who had wealth, who had all of these things. And, you know, then this unlettered prophet comes along, as they do, and basically said, yeah, you know, I think we should give everybody their rights, and I think we should give away some of our wealth and help the poor, and I think that every person is able to connect with God individually. And, you know, these were crazy radical ideas. And what's amazing about them is that within his lifetime, right, this prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was able to transform the culture of where he was from drastically, right? And so this is something that's unheard of. If you do social justice work, you know how slow and painful progress is. And for him to have been able to revolutionize his culture and the people of that time and place within his lifetime is amazing, right? And so that is a compelling story. And anyone who reads that is going to be, I think, excited about it, especially if they are a person that is interested in social justice.
And can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in feminism?
So, I was not raised to be a feminist. By virtue of, I had a very strong mother, but we were within a religious tradition that had very traditional ideas about men and women's roles. And so I watched my mom actually battle with that most of her life growing up, right? While I was growing up, she's a very strong and assertive person. And watching her have to kowtow to, leadership that she didn't agree with, or being told that she wasn't qualified to be in a certain position in community because of her gender, these were things that never sat well with either of us. And it was definitely one of the major things that made both of us leave that tradition, right? I went on to find something else. And she practices her Christianity in her own kind of non-denominational way. But both of us have, I think, still a bitter taste in our mouth because of the framework that we kind of forced ourselves into for so long. And so as a Muslim, as somebody who embraced Islam as an adult, I will know that kind of fundamentalist way of practicing religion that is just, women being in a kind of separate domain, quote unquote, complementary to the men, right? That is just never going to be where I go back to. And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with people not liking it. They're not going to, dictate my relationship with God, and they are certainly not going to dictate my practice. It's one of those situations of been there, done that.
Have you found a feminist community that you work with that understands your perspective and the reasons why you care about gender equity?
Absolutely. This is the great thing, right? And with the internet especially, not only have I found women within my community here in Austin who are on the same page and who are very assertive about, trying to make more space, trying to reclaim space and reclaim rights that are actually ours. I mean, there's kind of two issues with Islam, right? Or with any, I guess, Abrahamic religion, in that, yes, they are by their core, they are patriarchal. They're always going to be. I mean, or at least for the foreseeable future, we're not going to get away from this patriarchal structure because that is where they came from. But even within those kinds of patriarchal frameworks, there are many, many rights that have been kind of taken away over time and through culture and through practice and community. And so even if they are, consider themselves relatively orthodox Muslims, are pushing very strongly against these efforts to remove the rights that Islam, at the bare minimum, has guaranteed women. And so, yes, working with people here in Austin, and then being able to find people online who are doing this work, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. Very, very exciting stuff. And it's very heartening. And this is the kind of work where you are often confronted with people questioning your authenticity and your faith and your commitment to your religion, and to have other people there to kind of bolster you and remind you that it's not heretical to question those things, and that you're doing a good thing is super important.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the status of women within Islam at this time, about the gender inequities and equities that exist right now?
Kind of a difficult question. I think a lot of people look at, when they think of Muslim women, they immediately think of, women in Afghanistan or women in Saudi Arabia who, just got permission to drive. And certainly those are concerns, right? Those are oppressive cultures for women that even mainstream Islamic scholars are wont to criticize, right? These are things that even very, what you would consider a very orthodox Muslim scholar is going to look at it and say, that is not how Islam treats women. Now, those are extreme cases. And the reality is that, you know, we, even in the West, with all of our, you know, all of our amazing freedoms, we still have gender inequities here, right? And we are still fighting the same battles here that our mothers and grandmothers have been fighting for equal rights, equal pay, for space in religious community, for leadership opportunities in religious community, and in every other community that we're involved with. So, you know, it's difficult to say what is the status of women in Islam today, because a lot of it is relative. You're going to go to all over the world, and there's going to be all these different ways of, quote unquote, implementing Islam and defining women's roles in Islam. But on the other hand, there is definitely the world is getting smaller, and conversations are happening across the globe about women's rights and about defining what it means to be a Muslim woman and what Muslim community looks like. And so it's a fascinating time to be alive. It is a little bit chaotic, and there are lots and lots of very strong opinions. And I think that that's not unique to Islam, right? I think I see the same thing happening in Christian circles and in Jewish circles. This is happening all over. So in some ways, we're just part of the same movement.
Can you tell me about some of the goals that maybe Western Islamic feminists are working towards right now?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the top things that we are really working with in this country is the issue around Muslim women's role and their space, their actual physical space in mosque communities. So, you know, American mosques are, first of all, American Islam is not by any means a monolith. Like, globally, we're not a monolith. American Islam is also not a monolith. And we have, you know, just an infinite number of ways that people practice here, and communities are defined very, very differently. Originally, what you had was small pockets of people who were ethnically related, who would come and, you know, settle in a specific area, build a mosque, and their community was really based around as much based on their ethnicity as it was the religion. And as Islam is growing, and as people are moving around the country, you're seeing now this interesting sort of, like Frankensteinish thing happening, where we're putting all these different types of Muslims together. And this doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, right? You don't get such a broad range of cultural Muslims all together in a single space. So there's this effort to kind of weed out what is cultural and what is religion, what is actually part of the religion. And maybe even the majority of Muslim quote unquote cultures, there is a strong line drawn between the interactions of men and women. And the worship spaces where Muslims gather, if they do have women attending, there are some places in the world where women just don't even go to the mosque. It's considered the men's domain. But in the places where they do gather, there is physical barriers between them. So, for example, in Austin, we have lots of ways that that presents. There's either a curtain, you know, an opaque curtain, or there's like a divider that gets put up. The whole point being that women's space is very well defined. And the problem with that, of course, is that women feel excluded, right? Because they're not able to be on the, they can't visually see the leader of the prayer. They are not, you know, able to easily ask questions. And the worst way that this plays out is that women's spaces are neglected in mosques. So there's going to be a lot of mosques where you see, you know, the men have this whole worship area, and then they just like, oh yeah, I guess we should put something in there for the women. And then there's a little space that's either, you know, unkempt or cramped or dirty or whatever, that is just sort of like an afterthought. So there's this really kind of strong movement in American Muslim feminism to push back, to say we should have equal space, and furthermore, we don't necessarily even want that barrier there, and we want to be able to engage fully as members of the community. We want to be on the board of the mosque. We want to be leading, you know, certain activities. You're seeing a lot of younger Muslim women who are going into chaplaincy programs, although Islam, you know, mainstream Islam doesn't permit women to lead as imams. Women are looking and finding creative ways to take on spiritual leadership roles. So chaplaincy programs are an example of that. It's kind of a interesting evolution. I don't know that any one of us has a fixed endpoint of what we think American Muslim community is supposed to look like, but we are trying to accommodate the very real needs and the very real demands of being a modern Muslim in this country. And as you can imagine, it's slow going.
Yes, I understand that perfectly. Most of these efforts are slow. One issue that I'm curious about that I see a lot in the news is people talking about headscarves. And I've seen feminists arguing that, well, in favor of headscarves, say, talking about the women's rights to wear headscarves. And I've seen other feminists arguing to abandon headscarves altogether and that headscarves should not be a thing. Do you know anything about that issue? Is that a big deal in America or is that more of an international issue?
I mean, headscarves are definitely still very much a part of the public conversation in Islam in America. But I think that a lot of, at least most of the Muslim women I know who either wear a scarf or don't wear a scarf are pretty tired of the conversation. It's like that's kind of all we get to talk about in the media.
I understand that because I've actually seen that one in the media a lot.
It's really, people love it. They cannot get enough of that conversation. So I think what where we are with that, I mean, the principle that I go by, and I think that most Muslim women go by, regardless of whether or not they consider themselves feminists, and let's be honest, there's like there's a hesitation to use the word feminism for a lot of reasons. Even if women are very much standing up for their rights, they may not use the word feminism because in a lot of ways it is a Western construct or a Western concept. I think the idea being that a lot of Muslim women, especially Orthodox practicing Muslim women, want to feel that they are getting their rights from their religion and not from some external, what's the word I'm looking for? So, like a secular concept. Regardless, women in Islam, whether they consider themselves big F feminists or whether they are just standing up for their rights, are pretty much at peace with the idea that a woman's right is to choose what she's going to wear, right? That's not something you impose on a woman, and that if she is choosing to wear hijab, it's her choice. There shouldn't be any kind of laws that say you have to wear it. Right? But on the other hand, there shouldn't be laws such as there are in France that say you're not supposed to wear it, or you can't wear it. This is a very basic concept. You know, whether it's a bikini or a burqa, it's your right to wear it. It's your right to what you put on your body. And so that's where, you know, that's kind of where most of us that I know have left it. And I know raging feminists who are wearing a scarf, right? Like very, very, you know, powerful voices for feminism and for Muslim women who are wearing hijab. I also know very conservative Muslim women who don't wear hijab. So it's not a very good litmus test.
Most of those litmus tests aren't. That's what I've discovered. Let's talk about some of the barriers that are affecting the goals of Islamic women.
A lot of the barriers that we're facing are coming from, and I want to say, not all, has to do with an older generation that are governing in these communities. We also are working through, you know, we have such a strange, like I said, Frankensteinish community, because we have people who are brand new immigrants, along with people that have been, you know, their families have been here for generations. And so, you know, we are all kind of trying to figure out how we can work together. And for some people, the way to make that work is to go with the lowest common denominator, which is, this is what is the safest and the most orthodox route, so we're going to go that way. I understand that point of view. I do. I understand that a lot of people who are working on being settled here, who are immigrants, they need a place to go where they feel safe and comfortable, where they're not being challenged constantly, culturally and socially. However, that leaves an enormous amount of other people who are really uncomfortable in those situations out. It's really hard to get like demographics information from the Muslim community, but I will say that there are so many Muslims and so many Muslim women that I know personally who don't go to a mosque because it's not accommodating and because it's an uncomfortable situation for them. And so the question is, are we okay leaving all of those women out of the conversation and out of the community because we need to be able to accommodate this other group? It's not an easy thing to solve, right? I mean, we don't want to force anyone to do things that is going to be uncomfortable for them. This is, you know, people want to worship together because it's a sacred and important thing. But at the same time, you can't, there comes a point when you're just like, something's got to give here. Or really creative with our solutions, right? We need to find a way to accommodate all of this. That's the conversation that's happening. And it's playing out in lots of different ways. You're getting people who are fighting, you know, in these communities. But then you're also getting people who are creating third spaces. You're getting people who are making accommodations in whatever way they can. For example, there's a little mosque down by the University of Texas where, you know, there is a curtain, but the imam is very outspoken about women coming in front of the curtain if they feel comfortable. There are signs posted that the curtain can be moved at the sister's discretion, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's not like there's all this kind of mushy area between, you know, having no separation and having absolute separation, where people are kind of working out what feels right for them. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I think that in a few generations, we're going to have a lot more communities where this is not normal. But right now, it's the norm. And for those of us who are not comfortable with that, it's a difficult time to be a Muslim because you feel kind of pushed out and you feel sort of marginalized. Not sort of, you feel marginalized in when you go into those communities.
Have you seen any progress towards greater gender equity since you've converted to this religion?
Absolutely. And it's not, that isn't a reflection of the global, you know, religious tradition of Islam. But I am seeing culturally within the U.S. and within my city a lot of change, positive change. It's been almost 19 years now that I've been Muslim, And the thing that heartens me is the younger generation, the kids who are born and raised Muslim here in America, they're very, very confident in their identity. They're confident with being both American and Muslim. And so they don't have an identity crisis when they go to the mosque, and they are able to push back on things in a way that I've never felt comfortable doing or qualified doing. And so this younger generation of Muslim men and women, I think, are making some great strides in building out the community and fleshing out the community and making it more, I don't want to say more Americanized, but more culturally relevant to those of us who are from here.
Do you have any advice for feminists like me from other faiths that are working towards gender equity within our own communities?
Yeah. Like, just, you know, find a tribe. Obviously, you need people who are going to help reinforce where you are going and what you're trying to do. Maintain your connection to God first and foremost, because that's why we are in our religions, right? That's the purpose of our tradition, is that relationship. And if that takes a backseat, then nothing else is, you know, you can fight for gender equity anywhere. It doesn't have to be in the mosque or in a church, but it's what motivates us to do this work within religious community is because we love our traditions. We love God. We want everyone to have the same kind of access and the same kind of fulfilling relationship, right? It shouldn't just be reserved for men or for people with special learning. Every single one of us has a right to commune and to share space and to connect with God in the same way. And, you know, as long as I think keep that at the heart of it, you're going to be doing things and your motivation is going to be one of love and solidarity, and you won't focus so much on being punitive and trying to, you know, get back at the people that have mistreated you. I think that's where we can go really wrong, is when we let ourselves get bitter and our motivations change from doing something proactive and beautiful to being punitive and angry.
Before we close the podcast, is there anything that we didn't talk about that we should have, that we should add now?
Islam is the second largest religion in the world. It is incredibly diverse, culturally, ethnically, even ideologically and spiritually. We have such an enormous amount of differences. And in the United States, we have so many differences of the kinds of Muslims. In my city alone, and I don't live in a huge city, we have something like 70 different countries represented by Muslims in the mosque, right? So I don't speak on behalf of worldwide Islam, and nobody does. Nobody can. It's not possible. And we don't have the same kind of top-down leadership that you will see in a place like the Catholic Church or even the Mormon Church, where you have a governing body. We have nothing like that. Really, Islam is a very personal tradition. And when we come together in community, we are trying to accommodate a lot of differences. And I like that. I think diversity is amazing. But as a cautionary tale, when you talk to Muslims, you know, don't take any one person's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Understand that you're going to talk to 10 Muslims, you're going to get 10 different definitions of things. And somewhere in the middle of all of that, you're going to find some truth.